You ask me to dream again, and what kind of world are we going to get? Maybe a totally insane one? Full of monsters? Demons or witches? Dragons? All the things that we carry around inside us, all the nightmares, the fears. What's going to happen when that gets loose on the world?
Are you quite finished? Your negative approach to
it's our... your positive approach that's the danger.
I'm Andrea Johnson, and you're listening to Retro Rockets. Join us as we explore the deep heritage of science fiction and fantasy, yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Welcome aboard. You can listen to our episodes on Podbean, Spotify, and Amazon Music. Just search Retro Rockets Podcast. Our guest today is Leslie Connor, the editor-in-chief of Apex Magazine. Hi, Leslie. Can you introduce yourself and give us some behind the scenes about what your job is?
Of course. Hi, my name is Leslie Connor. I am the editor-in-chief of Apex Magazine, as well as the co-editor of 4 anthologies currently, and a writer and a Girl Scout leader.
You are a very busy lady.
I am, yeah.
So, editor-in-chief at Apex Magazine, what, give us some behind the scenes. Like, what's an unexpected piece of that job?
I don't know that it's unexpected, but it's a lot of reading, like a shit ton of reading, and I'm always behind. But I do all of the things that you think about, like the different parts of building a magazine. Like I find our cover art, do copy edits. We have wonderful associate editors who help me find nonfiction and reprints, but I select all of our original fiction and figure out which stories need to go together to make an issue, especially like click and all of that. So I think the part that maybe is like would be surprising to people is how much time each issue takes. Like you think, you know, it's about 200 pages, a little less than 200 pages in an issue. And you're like, okay, well, that's, you know, I can read that in a sitting.
You buy some cover art, you write an editorial, you sign off on what your nonfiction editors have purchased. Can possibly be difficult, right?
Right, but it's like literally the backwards publishing math is, yeah, I'm currently like, I have January scheduled, most of March of next year's schedule, and I'm starting to look into scheduling May and June of next year. And so sometimes I think that authors are a little surprised when I'm accepting their story and I'm like, it's going to be late 2024. But that's just to give us the time to get everything put together and to get everything built and out to where it needs to go. That's how it works.
I had no idea that you're working so far ahead on issues like that.
That's a me thing. I want it to be done, like, and then not worried about it. So when I kind of took over, I slowly moved us back because that last minute panic is not my friend.
I thought that's like that is the magazine publishing world, is the last minute panic.
Well, there always is. Like technically the November issue should be to our ebook builder done tomorrow. It is not gonna be because I'm running slightly behind, but I should have November done in the first half of next week. That way Leah Ning, who does all of our ebook builds, can build it and we can get it to the authors for proofs, and there's just a lot of steps.
Okay, so only being like 3 or 4 days behind, like that, trust me, that's not a big deal. It's not.
That's what you're everyone good. Keeps telling me. And you're inside, good.
It's
I'm
all
like,
good.
Oh my gosh.
It's all good. And you had mentioned in your introduction that you're also the co-editor of some anthologies, and you have some very, very cool anthologies coming up that are going to be funded through Kickstarter. Over the last few years, I have loved watching all of the Apex Kickstarters. Just they're promoted beautifully, and there's all this beautiful artwork and all of these beautiful articles in the Kickstarter, and they all always fund. So, okay, first of all...
let's keep going. Don't jinx me.
So, first of all, tell me about the anthologies that are coming up. How many bottles of wine should I bring you during the Kickstarter period?
Lot.
Okay.
Right now, Jason Sizemore and I are just finishing Robotic Ambitions. The pre-orders for that actually start the day we launch the Map of Lost Places. That way, if you want to pre-order through the Kickstarter and help both anthologies, you can.
I love that.
Map of Lost Places is a horror anthology that I'm co-editing with Sheree Renee Thomas. And that launches on October 10th. And then early next year, and this is like a secret, not officially announced leak.
You know, when this episode goes, like, this will be officially leaked. Keep that in mind.
But I am working with Mary Sangiovanni for an anthology that is yet to be titled. And the theme of that anthology is, it's not really more of a theme, more as a feeling. They all have to be characters that have had some sort of trauma or manipulative relationship that inspires how they react to the plot of the story. There's a story coming out in the January issue of Apex Magazine by Elizabeth Ring, and I cannot remember the title of it right off the top of my head. But that story is the story that I was like, holy shit. I tend to like those types of stories. Like, we had a story by Tim Wagoner that was like that. Hannah Yang had a story in Apex that was like that, where you have these seriously messed up relationships that are completely controlling how your protagonist relates to the world around it. And I find that fascinating. And I think that authors can take that in a lot of really cool ways. So that's like next year, like the thing.
I'm already on board.
But coming up very soon, I am doing Map of Lost Places with Sheree, which I am so excited to get to work with her because it's Sheree. She's and it's horror stories that are all set. It's kind of like a travel guide to places that you don't want to stumble across. And so I'm like super jazzed with some of the authors that we have lined up already. And then very excited. We're going to be open to open submissions the entire month of December, which scares me a little bit because we were open for like 2 weeks for Robotic Ambitions and got like 600 submissions. So an entire month, I'm like, that's a lot of time. But I'm very excited to see what places people pick and like what kind of horrifying situations they send us. So I'm really excited about that.
I don't know if I would want to be part of that team of slush readers, or if I would not because you're going to get just a bazillion stories, but it's like, okay, I have to read 500 short stories about terrifying locations. This is great.
Yeah, it's going to be intense. And we're on a pretty tight schedule for Map of Lost Places, tighter than Robotic Ambitions was. Mm-hmm. And so it is going to be like, for a while there, I'm going to just be wandering around, like, mumbling about these weird places because it's just complete onslaught of the stories.
I wonder if I can ship you wine from where I live. I'll have to check the laws for your state on the state that I live in because I think you're really going to need it after reading that slush pile.
It's going to be an intense slush pile, but I'm looking forward to it.
Like a kind of a technical question for putting anthologies together. So you've got some authors, and like this might be true in different ways for different anthologies, but you have authors that you're already getting stories from or that you want stories from. Mm-hmm. And then you also do open call for submissions. Mm-hmm. How do you decide, like, okay, how many open submission stories are we going to have? How many preset stories are we going to have? Like, what is that internal, like, logistical conversation like?
I think half and half is a good balance. Right now, if Map of Lost Places just funds, we have 12 solicited anchor authors who have already said, yes, I'm going to send you a story. If it just funds and we don't hit any of our stretch goals, we will have 8 open spots. But as stretch goals, we're opening up 4 additional spots. So we would
Right, that's how you'll get the half and half. Okay.
Right. Robotic Ambitions, we had 12 anchor authors. We ended up opening up to, we had 13 stories that we pulled for Slush from that. So, but 25 is a lot of stories.
That is a really, like, when I think anthology, it's like, you know, you're buying an album from a band or a musician that you like. You're like, okay, I'm going to get like 13, 14 tracks.
Yeah, it hit me when I was really in the depths of Robotic Ambitions. I'm like, this is a lot of stories. And I mean, they're wonderful and it's beautiful and it's very exciting. It was very overwhelming when I was like deep in the minds of trying to get copy edits out to everybody. I'm like, how many robot stories do I have to copy edit today to make our deadline?
Only 14 today.
14 today. But yeah, so I love it because it's like, here I am, we're able to give readers a chunky book. Like, they're really, because you know how it is, anthologies are a grab bag. You're gonna love some of the stories, and then some
you're just gonna bounce off of. It's how it is.
Off of you. But that's the wonderful thing, is it's like, okay, so even if you know, 5 bounce off of you.
That's 20 great stories.
You'll have 20 stories that you're like, this was amazing. And or you're going, Leslie's making me cry.
Two things can be true at the same time. You can make me cry and be amazing.
Yeah.
How many stories in that anthology are going to make me cry? Not all 25, I hope.
Not all 25. Okay. I reined myself in. I love a story that makes you cry.
I know.
I can't help it. It's like, if I'm at the end of it, like, then I'm like, yes, I love you.
Okay, so 24 out of 25 will make me cry.
No, it's funny because when we were putting together the TOC, I color coded it, like the sad stories, because I was like, we can't put them all together.
You gotta have like sad story, zany story, right, sad like, story, kind of sort of happy story.
Exactly. That way, you like, I didn't want to like beat anyone over the head with it, where they're just like, "Geez, Louise, I need an antidepressant and a box of tissues."
What is I remember seeing all the promotion for robot anthologies, but I don't. Some of our listeners may not have caught all of that. So, what is the theme of Robot Ambitions?
So Robotic Ambitions is an anthology of stories that kind of explores robotic and mechanical sentience and what do robots want. A lot of the stories are told from the perspective of robots or AIs who, you know, are in a lot of different
like different environments. Yeah.
Different environments. And yeah, like if you're a robot or if you're an AI who's been living for, you know, hundreds of years or thousands of years, like what do you want? What do you want out of life? I'll be honest, like when Jason and I first started kicking around the idea for the anthology, I was like, oh, something light. Because Apex I know. Apex publishes pretty dark stuff, and the anthology we had of original fiction we did before that was Do Not Go Quietly, which
was a very powerful collection of stories.
It's a very powerful collection, but it's also very heavy. There's not a light story in that anthology. So like when we were like, what are we gonna do now? I was like, I want something fun, like robot stories. Robots are fun.
Like Murderbot? Super fun.
Super fun. And there are fun stories in here. there's one story that it almost feels like, I love it because it's like the, you get the backstory of like a side character in an adventure tale, and I just think it's brilliant. But there's one where a chef is accidentally kills somebody, and like a chef robot, and his reaction to it is, it's just hysterically funny. But then there's other ones where, you know, it's very heavy stuff. You have robots who are realizing that, you know, they're an appliance, basically, you know, even though they have sentience, they're an appliance, and they weren't built to last forever, and kind of coming to the actualization of what that means and their own demise. So yeah, they're just super heavy.
You're going to make me feel really guilty for recycling my old cell phone because it has outlived its usefulness.
That cell phone may have feelings, and it's really sad now that you're getting a new one.
Well, I got the new one, I think, last summer, and I just never got around because the place that I bought it at didn't have an option to recycle my old one. So I was like, okay, I'll just hang on to the old one until I can find a place that'll recycle it. And, like, don't tell my husband, but that old one's been sitting in the top dresser drawer of my dresser for, like, a year. And I just haven't gotten around to recycling it. And now I don't think I can. Like, it doesn't work at all.
It's just sitting there going, it's just someone new.
Yeah, it's just sitting there. Every time I open up that drawer, I'm like, oh, that's a really cute pop socket. I'm never going to pick that phone up again.
That's the story that I missed in Robotic Ambitions, is the sad sentient cell phone in somebody's drawer.
Oh, man, I missed that. I missed that open call for submissions. It's like a dementia phone. Because it died, and then like I kept trying to like bring it back to life, and it was just such an old model that it couldn't handle the Android updates. Yeah. And then it just gave up the ghost. It just died. But it is still sitting there. I when it comes down to it, I feel bad about putting it into a landfill.
No, I totally get that. Yeah, I have like two old Kindles that I'm like, can't throw you away.
But you don't really work very well anymore. Yeah. I do really love like robot stories told from the robot's point of view. It's like you had said something a couple of minutes ago about like what do robots want? How do they want to live their life? And the first thing I thought of is like, you know, I don't know, you're 11, 12, 13 years old, and you're finally old enough that you can make some of your own decisions. You know, you're old enough that your parents let you do some things on your own, and you finally have this moment in your life where you can decide. You've never had that before. And it's like, it almost, not to say that like 12-year-old kids are robots, because they're absolutely not, but it's like, it's almost like the same kind of like mental processes of, I'm allowed to make this choice. Oh my gosh, what do I do? Because like, you can do anything.
Well, and another interesting way to look at it is, okay, what if you have made a decision, but you're not allowed to make that choice because your programming doesn't allow you to make the decision you want to make? So it's an interesting concept to really explore.
Would you know? Like, if that was your programming, would you know?
Well, that's kind of one of the things that it kind of explores, is like, you know, over the course of time, as you become aware, and then you're like, oh well, this is a problem, but I can't fight it. So it's just really interesting. I was so excited with what the authors turned in, because they turned in, you know, if I had written these stories, they would have just all been fun robots doing stupid wacky things. But they've turned in some stories that just absolutely blew me away. And I'm really excited for people to actually get to read them now, because I feel like I've been living with this like book baby by myself. And finally I get to be like, look at it.
Can't wait to see the baby pictures. Thank you for listening to Retro Rockets. I'm your host, Andrea Johnson. Our guest today is Leslie Connor, the editor-in-chief of Apex Magazine. Don't give us any spoilers. But, like, what's the most surprising story in that anthology?
I would say the one that really made me go, holy crap, was Danny Cherry Jr.'s story. And again, I think it's, I'm really horrible with titles. It's something about 10 men. But it was a story. He was one of the authors that we solicited based solely on a reprint that we had published in Apex magazine that just absolutely floored me. And I was like, I want to see what else he can do. And he turned in a story that just absolutely floored me again, which makes me now, I just want to be like, send me everything you have. I want it all. But yeah, so I think that's the one that really surprised me the most, because we did solicit him like based on this one story. Most of the time when you're soliciting authors who you're very aware of what their work is and you're familiar with many, many stories. And this one, I was like, that one reprint we did just blew me out of the water. And so I was like, no, I want to see. And he did not disappoint at all. So yeah, I'm very excited for people to get to read it.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait. I almost wish I hadn't said, don't give us any spoilers, because now I want to know.
No spoilers, but it's very good.
Okay. All right, so we've talked a little bit about the magazine. We've talked about some, like, insanely cool anthologies. And you kind of, off the cuff a bit, you mentioned that an issue of the magazine is about 200 pages. Mm-hmm. Anthologies are, give or take, 20 to 25 stories. How is the process of editing the anthologies different from the process of editing the magazine?
The biggest difference is that with an anthology, you have a very specific theme. Whereas sometimes I put together stories for the magazine because I'm like, they vibe well together. Like, it's not a theme that maybe only I can see the connection. And also, it's like you're working with the magazine because you're on a budget. So it's like I have a word count budget for the magazine. So sometimes you're just like, I need to find a fantastic story that is not more than like 1,200 words long, because that's all I've got left. So sometimes, you know, they're all Apex stories. They fit together. But at the same time, they don't necessarily hold to a specific theme.
So the shape of the puzzle pieces is different.
Yeah, it is. It's like you're not trying so much for things to be like, it's like with an anthology, you're trying to form one cohesive picture. And with a magazine, you're like, these things look like each other. Kind of.
That makes sense. And it sounds like, I've got more flexibility in the magazine. But because of the word count limit, like the pieces have to fit together in a very specific way.
They do. Yeah. I mean, obviously there's a budget with an anthology as well, but your budget is like set based on what was your upper word count on submissions. Whereas with the magazine, it's like, no, I can have this many words and I need that many words. So it's, if you've got stories that fit together but leave an awkward hole, you have to find something to fit that awkward hole.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Either that or I go like, I'm going to be over budget, which is not good. We don't want to be over budget. Mm-mm.
That's really fascinating, though, just, the different operating environments of the two different kinds of volumes, I guess.
The nice thing is with the magazine is that, like, when I'm reading the magazine slush, I buy stories that I love, right? And if I can't publish it right now, then I can hold it. It can fit. It doesn't have to fit in that specific issue. So then I can get, like, a little, not a big pile, but a little pile of stories that have been accepted, but I haven't scheduled them yet. So then you can kind of like, you're looking at them and you're going, wait a second, well, this one kind of fits with this one. And then it's like the issue kind of forms based around that.
Oh, I love that.
Rather than having an anthology where you already know what the theme is, so the stories have to fit the theme. So it's kind of like a backwards process.
That is backwards. Man, I'm really happy that you're doing that and not me. Because I would just do both things backwards, and then it would be a total mess.
You'd be like, I don't know what's going on.
I don't know what's going on. Like Apex does even like more cool stuff, like beyond the magazine, beyond the anthologies, beyond the successful Kickstarters. You guys also do. You have Snap Judgment. You have Reach Your Apex Reach Your Apex workshops. How in the world do you organize those things? Like, you just have so much going on.
I'll be honest. Marissa Van Uden organizes Snap Judgment. I just have to like show up and try to sound intelligent. Like, that's my job for that.
Well, bless her.
Right. Reach Your Apex, Jason does almost all of the behind the scenes with that. We all kind of brainstorm, like, who do we think would be really good instructors to bring in? Like, who has a viewpoint or a voice that maybe isn't out there that somebody can get someplace else, that can stand out? But Jason does pretty much all of the figuring out, like all the scheduling and when things are going to be running and all of that part. So that sort of stuff, I am very lucky. I can just be like, not my problem. And like I say, I show up for Snap Judgment and Marissa has magically like found us a guest and got all of the submissions. And I just show up and hear them. If anybody's not familiar with Snap Judgment, it's our quarterly live critique show. So basically I show up, it's me, Rebecca Treasure, and a guest editor. They are read to us live on YouTube. The first 250 words of a short story or of a novel, and we do a live critique, like, without having ever seen it before, without knowing who the author is. We know nothing about it except the title and the genre and those first 250 words. No pressure.
I got to be your narrator once, and truly one of the most fun experiences of my life.
Yeah, it's definitely fun. But Marissa does all of the behind the scenes stuff. She collects all of the, because obviously I can't see the submissions ahead of time.
Oh, that's true.
So I don't see any of the submissions. She compiles it all and sends it out ahead of, like, so we get it like right before the show so we can read along. It's really that pressure of like, is my brain going to brain today? Will I be coherent?
Oh, right, because it's live.
It's live.
That's, like, terrifying. It's like America's Got Talent.
There was one episode. Oh, well, Cherie Renee Thomas was the guest editor. I had COVID.
And were you still able to do the episode or no?
I don't go back and listen to it, so you guys can tell me. And also, because it's video. But I was at my parents' house in Morgantown, and their internet is not great. So I had to, like, I couldn't do video, which is, I'm glad, because I had COVID. I looked like death. But did I make sense? I'm not sure. Everybody said it was good. I don't remember a whole lot other than being like, please don't sound like an idiot. Please don't sound like an idiot. Like, that just kept running through my head because I felt really bad.
And it's like, if you have COVID, like, you know, how much Sudafed and how much who knows what are you on?
Right. And I'm just like propped up in bed, like trying to be like, make one point and just make one good point and then let Cherie and Jason take the rest of it. I'm not sure. I haven't listened to it. So,
well, it is a very cool show.
Thank you.
And it's, I find it a very unique show. You know, other speculative fiction magazines, like, have stuff. Mm-hmm. But I really think Snap Judgment is just very, very unique in the field right now.
I've seen it done at conventions, which I have to say that would be even harder as the editor to live critique in front of a live audience. a lot of people have told me that they find it very, very helpful. It does really give you a kind of an insight into what is the editor thinking as they're making those snap decisions, because, you know, we have a lot of submissions. I have to make decisions very quickly. It is a good way if you're a new author, or even if you're not a new author and you're like, well, what are they thinking?
I've watched a couple of the episodes, and what my takeaway from those, and I'm sure other people have a similar takeaway, is, okay, you've got 250 words and that's it. Mm-hmm. So read through your short story, find the area that has the most impactful 250 words. And now that is the opening of your short story.
Yeah, that's a good one to do. I mean, mm-hmm. and the games are really important, but it's not, it's what's going to keep us reading, but also make sure you land your ending. Because there's nothing worse than reading a fantastic story that you're like, I'm going to buy this. And then you get to the end and you're like, oh, shit, that didn't work.
That was a crappy ending.
Yeah.
All right, well, I promise this podcast episode will not have a crappy ending, I promise. So as we're recording this, you recently finished a subscription drive.
We did.
Like, I was watching all of your social media and, like, biting my fingernails and, like, watching the number count go up. Tell us a little bit about the subscription drive. Like, why did you do it?
It was super, it was amazing how successful it was. I mean, it really came down to looking at the numbers and going, okay, this is how much we publish in each issue, and this is how in the red we are, and we can't keep running in the red. So rather than just slashing the issues and not mentioning why, or pretending it didn't exist and then we end up closing because we're running in the red, I was like, you know what? We're going to go 2 weeks. We're going to let people know exactly where we are, what will happen if we get no new subscribers. We aren't going away, but the issues will be much smaller. And just more or less say, because you always hear, there's a lot of magazines that end up closing. And then people are like, well, if I had known. So I just wanted to be like, all right, so you know, this is where we are. To stay the same, we needed to get to 300 new subscribers. We got to 200. So starting in January's issues will be slightly smaller, but not a lot, because we were able to gain so many new subscribers. I mean, it did a big push to keeping us where we're going to be good. And like I said, by bringing it down a little bit, it makes us be in a very...
in a healthier,
going forward. So it was just a way to make sure we keep thriving.
It was, I really appreciated just how transparent you were about, hey, this is what it costs to run this magazine. And, you know, no magazine is like making $1 billion, but you have to pay the authors and you have to buy cover art and you have to pay the person who formats your ebook and you have to pay the person that does something else. And those things do cost money. And I, with all the information that you gave and just that transparency, I hope that other magazines will feel a little bit better about, hey, we should be transparent about, what does this cost and how many subscribers do we need per year to actually break even and not be in the red?
Yeah, I think it's something that we really need to be talking about more. Mm-hmm. I always kind of laugh because you have that feeling like editors have this like persona that we have to be like, everything's fine. When on the inside, in reality, we know
that it's like, not.
We know that it's not. And we're very aware, but it's just like you don't want to constantly be like, buy our thing. So you just have to find a balance and just be like, look, we publish everything free on the website, but buying that issue for $4.99 goes a long way. Like it goes a long way to helping us stay in a place where we aren't going to have to close our doors. So I am trying to be very transparent so that people know this is why they're going down a little bit. Or, you never want people to feel like, oh, well, we subscribed and now it's shorter. It's like, okay, well, this is, you got to show them
that. Right. It's so like, this is the reality. Right.
This
right.
is reality. And nobody is getting rich. Like, there's no secret stash of cash in the background that, you know, I'm just like hoarding. Basically, if we have money, if we're making a profit, we put it right back into the magazine.
Yeah, you're buying more fiction. You're buying another piece of artwork. You're putting it back into the magazine.
Yeah, and so it's just, you can't. I think that we need to have more conversations where editors are very open. I mean, people always talk about, like, you got to make sure you pay your authors. And absolutely, absolutely, you need to pay your authors. But I would say the vast majority of editors out there either make very little or they're volunteering their time because it's their baby, it's their project, it's their passion.
But their time has value. You know, I trust me, I get it. It's a passion project. It's your baby. But your time has value.
And so it's just, I think it's a conversation we need to have more often. And I think that more editors need to be open about the fact that it's like, not only are they working for no money, a lot of us are working crazy hours or it's our second job. And so burnout is so intense and so real. And then people are like, well, I don't understand. I don't understand why this market closed. And you're just like, I do. I understand.
A kind of a silver lining of the last 3 or 4 years, I think, is that it's now okay to talk about burnout. It's now okay to, we don't have to be overly optimistic 28 hours a day. Like, it's okay to say, hey, this is a problem here.
The conversation is really getting started, especially among like editors within genre.
Good.
And I think that it's long overdue. And I think that it's a conversation we need to stop having in whispers, like where you're checking on your other editor in chief of the magazines, like, hey, are you really okay?
Yeah, bring it out in the open.
I think it needs to be out in the open. Mm-hmm. I think that the readers and authors need to understand how much work it is, and how, like, sometimes, you know, you just need to step back and have a minute to be like, I'm not okay right now. So.
I think a lot of readers would benefit from having more information like that, you know, almost like the, you know, what is it? How's the sausage made? And how many hours does this really take?
I am the channel of this is exactly how everything goes. I'm probably too transparent.
Leslie, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you for having me. It's been wonderful to see you, and I miss you. I haven't seen you in real life in way too long.
I know. We have to get together. I'll drive down, or we'll meet halfway or something.
Definitely. Definitely. Thank you again for having me.
The Retro Rockets podcast explores the deep heritage of vintage and classic science fiction and fantasy. I'm your host, Andrea Johnson. Our show is recorded, mixed, and produced by Andy Robbins. John Wenger is our special consultant. Our music is by Meter through a Creative Commons license, and Carolyn Baker designed our logo. Thanks for listening, and join us again next time on Retro Rockets. Thank you.